We begin the current daf Maseches Nedarim daf Lamed Daled. We begin on the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf. And that is, in the Mishnah of the previous daf, the Mishnah said that even if someone takes a neder, saying that this person is going to be forbidden to have any pleasure for me, but he could still do certain things for him. As we explained in the previous daf, he can give the machzah shekel for him, he can go ahead and pay up his debts, and we explained if that's going according to Chanan, or even according to the Rabbanan. Then the next case the Mishnah spoke about that he could do is he could be machzal avadasa. He could return that person's lost object. So there was a machlekes in the Gemara between Reb Ami and Reb Asi. What is the case conceptualization that permits this mader, the one who took the neder, prohibiting benefit from that person, to return his lost object? One opinion said, that's only, as the general case of the Mishnah was talking about, when the one who's returning the lost object is prohibited to give pleasure to the one that lost the object. So now we said that he's allowed to return the lost object because he's not really giving him anything. He's giving back his own object, which was his, so he's not really giving anything. However, that opinion said, but if the Bala Veda was prohibited to give pleasure to the one who's returning the lost object, then it actually would be prohibited to return the lost object. And that's because that opinion holds that we are concerned for pruta de Rav Yosef, which means to say the benefit that a person has when he's involved in doing a mitzvah, that then he doesn't have to do any other mitzvahs. So when he's returning that person's lost object, he'll be gaining from him, which is problematic if you hold the case would be talking about that even Balaveda made a neda on the one who's returning the lost object, because he won't have to give tzedakah to other people. That's called a pleasure. And therefore that can't be the case of the Mishnah of allowing him to return the Aveda. Because if it was, then he would be prohibited. That's one opinion. The other opinion said that, no, even if the Nichsei Balaveda are Asr on the Machzer, and not just the Machzer on the Balaveda, it's a two-way neder, doesn't make a difference, he would still be allowed to return the Aveda. And that's because that opinion holds that we're not concerned for the Pruta de Rav Yosef, because it's not so common that just at that moment that you return a lost object, a poor person is going to come and collect and say, oh, I don't have to give you, I'm involved in the mitzvah, and therefore there's Hana. We're not concerned for that, it's not so common. And therefore, even though that would be considered hana, it's not considered getting hana from that person who returned the lost object to, and therefore you're allowed to return it, even if it's them, both of them made a neder on each other. That was the machlokes we had in the previous daf. Now that the Gemara continues, and Tznanin asks from the halacha of our Mishnah. Now there are two girsais. There's our girsa that's printed in our text, and then there's the girsa of the Ran. So first we're going to explain the Gemara according to our girsa, and then we're going to explain the Gemara according to the girsa, the text of the Ran. So according to our girsa, the Gemara is asking now, on the first Man D'Amar we quote on the previous daf, according to that who holds that it is a legitimate concern, the pleasure of what's called Pruta de Rav Yosef, of that Man D'Amar holds that our Mishnah is only talking about that he's allowed to return the lost object to the person that he made a neder on, who's the one who lost it, it's only that one way. But had it been that the one who lost the object had made a neder on the one that's returning it, he wouldn't be allowed to return it, because he would be having a hana, which is forbidden because of the neder of Pruta de Rav Yosef. On that, our Gemara asks now, but we learn our Mishnah as follows. Our Mishnah then said, after it said that you're allowed to return the lost object, it said as follows, that Malkum Shanoit Malah Schar, however, in a place where people who return lost objects get compensated, because people are busy, people are working, he's taking out a half hour of his workday to return the lost object. So in such a situation, the Mishnah said, Tipul Hanola Hektish. So now that excess money, which is a pleasure over here that was created because someone has to be compensated here, so that has to go to Hektish. So on that, the Gemara asks as follows. Bishlem Lamandam, according to the opinion that said, that even when, as the Rush explained, not only is it that, as the Mishnah is talking about, that the Madr is the one who's returning it, is allowed to return it to the Balaveda, but that the Mishnah could even be talking about a case when the nechasim of the Balaveda is forbidden on the one who's returning it, that's still Nami Mahadir, he's still allowed to return the lost object, as we said, because what he's returning to him, he's not giving him anything, because it's his lost object. And although he's forbidden to have pleasure from the Balaveda, the fact that he doesn't have to give tzedakah right now, as the Gemara explained, is not so common, and therefore that's not either called Hana, because they're not concerned for this, what's called Pruta de Rav Yosef. So that would make sense what the Mishnah then continues and says, Ahai Nediktani, that when generally the one who's returning the lost object gets compensated, that now has to go to Hektish. And the reason being is because the one who returned the lost object can't take that compensation, because then he would be getting Hanah from him. And neither could the Baal Aveda hold on to it, because then he'd be gaining by saving that money that really he should have been paying. So that makes sense now why neither of them could get it, because it's a double-sided neder. So it has to go to Hekdesh. But El Mandam, according to the opinion that said, that the Mishnah is not talking about that the Nechasim of the Baal Aveda is forbidden on the Machzer. And that is because, as we said, that they wouldn't allow it to return in such a situation. Because then the Machzer would be gaining when he returns the lost object because of Prudat Rabbi Yosef. And rather, according to this opinion, our Mishnah is only talking about when the Nechasim of the Machzer are forbidden on the Baal Aveda, but not also when the Baal Aveda is forbidden on the Machzer. So if that's the case, Samai Tipol HaNola Hekdesh. Why is it that the Mishnah tells us that if usually there's compensation, it has to go to Hekdesh? What do you mean? Let the Machzer take it. He's not forbidden to have pleasure from the Baal Aveda. And because the Mishnah cannot be talking about such a case. As we said, because if it was, he wouldn't be able to return it, let alone to then move on to the next phase of, oh, what do we do when they get compensated? So if there's no Isser, so let him go ahead and take the payment. Why does it have to go to Hekdesh? So then the Gemara answers, Achado Katani, which again, according to the Girsa that we're going with in the interpretation of the Rush, is that we're going in regards to one of the two components. In other words, we're only talking in regards to the Baal Aveda. For example, what the case conceptualization of our Mishnah is in this halacha of Tipol HaNola Hekdesh, if they usually get compensated, is talking about if the one who returns it doesn't want to get paid. You're right. He's allowed to get paid because we're only talking about that there's a one-way nether. But if he doesn't want to take the compensation, that's what the Mishnah is saying. We were going achad katan. We're talking about only in regards to one of the two people. We're saying that then the Baal Aveda can't hold on to it, because if he would hold on to it, he would be getting hanah from the one who returned it by him not taking his money, which he rightfully has, and that was his mudr hanah from him. That's why the hanah goes to Hekdesh. Now, the Rush addresses a very difficult question then. So why didn't the Mishnah say, okay, so we understand how you're explaining what the Mishnah means, Tipol HaNola Hekdesh, it's talking about such a case when he doesn't want to take it. But on that, the Rush asks, just say very simply, let the Mishnah say it, that in a normal case, where it should say, Yikabel HaMachzer Schara, that he could take it, because it's only one-way neder. Why talk about it when he doesn't want it, and then it goes to Hekdesh? Just, in other words, he has to take it because the Baal Aveda can't hold on to it. So, and that the Rush says, because the whole Mishnah is talking about when it's being returned for free. The reason being is because when the Rashi says, Mavzul Abidasa, he can return them his lost object, obviously that's talking about for free. Because if it was for pay, then obviously then he would be allowed to return it. And the reason being is because the Chasim of the Baal Aveda, as we explained according to this man, the Amr, is permitted to go to the Mavzul, and if he's allowed to pay him, and it would be talking about paying him, so of course he can return it, because now for sure the Machzer is not giving any hanot to the Baal Aveda, because let alone that it's his object, he's actually compensating him. So therefore it must be that the Reish's Chiddush is even when he's not getting paid for it. And still he's allowed to do it for the Baal Aveda, even though the Baal Aveda is mudder from him, because that's not really giving him hanot, you're just giving him what's really his. So the Rush says, therefore, since the Reish is talking about when it's being returned for free, so then the Sefer, which goes on to the next phase and says, okay, what do we do, but if they usually get compensated, so we're talking about also when he's doing it for free. In other words, he doesn't want to go ahead and take money for it. And that's why it says, Tipol HaNola Hekdesh, in such a situation where he doesn't want to get paid for it, just like the Reish is talking about he's not getting paid for it. So that's why we say that, okay, it has to go to Hekdesh, because since he's not taking it, and the Baal Aveda cannot hold on to it, because that is the one way that the nether is, so that's why we say Tipol HaNola Hekdesh. Again, that was according to the Girsa that we have in our Gemara. But the Ran has a different Girsa. We're going to quote the Girsa and then the interpretation of the Ran. According to the Girsa of the Ran, the Gemara asks, we learned in our Mishnah, Mokam Shenoit Le'aschar, in a place where the one who returns the lost object usually gets compensated. So on that, the Mishnah said, Tipol HaNola Hekdesh. So in such a situation, the pleasure of this amount that now normally he would have to shell out to the one who's returning the lost object, he's not giving it to him, he can't hold on to it, he has to give it to Hekdesh. Now, that according to the Gears of the Ran, the question is according to the other Mandama, according to the one that's not concerned for the Prutah de Rabbi Yosef. So that the Gemara asks as follows, Bishleim le Mandama, we understand very well according to the opinion that says, Bishenichze Machzer Asurna Baal Aveda, that when the state of the one who's returning it is forbidding on the one that lost it, meaning again like the simple case of what our Mishnah is talking about, But the other way around, if they say that the lost that the one who lost it, that his things are forbidden on the one who's returning it, then loy mahadar mishnah is not talking about that, because then the maxer wouldn't even be able to return in the first place, as we said, because they're concerned for Prutu Rav Yosef, you wouldn't be able to return it because you're gaining. So therefore, according to that interpretation, our mishnah is only talking about one way neder. So that's what again, according to the Gears of the Ram, the Gemara says, we understand what the mishnah then moves on to say. So if it's a place where the one who returns it usually gets compensated, so then we understand why it has to go to Hekdash. But Elamando Amar, but according to the one that holds, Afila Nichse Balaveda Surm Al Mahzer, Nami Mahadr, that it could be even when it's two ways. The you could return the lost object not only when the Mahzer made the Balaveda forbidden to have enough from him, but even when the Balaveda made the Mahzer forbidden to have enough from him. That even then you could return it, again, because they're not concerned with Prutei Rav Yosef. So then, that's why they hold that you could return it even in both situations. But then the question is, am I tipul anol lehekdesh? According to that and that manda amar, then why does the money go to hekdesh? So the Ran says that this is the primary gist that should be in our text. And he explains, interpretation is as follows. What the Gemara was saying was that we understand according to the opinion that says that our Mishnah is talking specifically only in the case that when the properties, the hana of the machzer is forbidden on the balaveda, because whereas if the balaveda was forbidden on the machzer, then he wouldn't be able to return it in the first place, because as we explained, they hold Prutei Rav Yosef is a legitimate concern, and he would be having hana by just returning it, because then he wouldn't have to give tzedakah to other people. So on that, the Gemara says, so according to that interpretation, it's very well understood the safe of the Mishnah that says, but if the one who returns it usually gets compensated, that then, if the one who's returning the lost object is a distinguished, respectable type of a person who doesn't want to get paid for returning a lost object, so that is what the Mishnah is coming to say, that then the Balaveda cannot hold on to that compensation that he's not paying out this time, because he's having pleasure from the machzer now. So rather, tipla no lahagdash. That would be a simple explanation for the halacha of our Mishnah. Again, it's only a one-way nether, and really he could get paid this machzer, but he doesn't want to get paid for a mitzvah that he's doing of Hashavas Aveda. So that's what the Mishnah says. Okay, fine. So if he doesn't want to take it, so tipla no lahagdash. But the Gemara's question is, according to the pin that holds, that even when the nechasim of the Balaveda are forbidden on the machzer, and you can still return it. And that's because, as we explained, this opinion holds that we're not concerned for Prutei Rav Yosef, so it's not a legitimate hana that he'd be getting by returning it, even though he's forbidden to have hana from the properties, from the pieces, which is even this Aveda, from the Balaveda. Then the question is, what turns out is as follows. That means that the Reisha that said, U'machzul Avedasai, that you could return the Aveda, is talking about even when the nechasim of the Balaveda is asurin in the machzer, and when the machzer is forbidden on the Balaveda. So it comes out that the sefer that says that when there's compensation, tipla no lehekdesh, is going on both cases of the reisha. So in that, the Gemara's question is, we understand when it's only that the nechzi machzer are asurin on the Balaveda, that then we understand why tipla no lehekdesh. Why? Because that would be like the other man, the Amar. Because if he's a respectable type of a person, if he doesn't want to take it, meaning because the Ran's learning it as two individual cases, not as a double, which as we explained in the Rush, that it's a two-way, but rather that it's both, it's either or. What we see from the Reisha is it could either be when the Machzer is forbidden on the Balaveda, or when the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer. Either one is not a concern. Now, that the Ran says, now, if you're splitting up them as two separate cases, so we understand one of them, which is like the other mandamar, which is when the machzer is made a neder on the balaveda, where he's allowed to take his money, but if he doesn't want to, however the mudr, which is the balaveda, can't have enough from them, so that's when you would say tibla no lehekdesh. But the problem is, but let's take the other way, because according to this mandamar, it works either one. So the problem is when the nichse balaveda are forbidden on the machzer, only in such a case, then why do we say that tipla no lehekdesh? Which the Ran's interpretation in this is that why would it go to hekdesh? Pay him. Let the balaveda pay the machzer. What do you mean? Isn't it that the machzer is forbidden to have enough in the balaveda? So on that, the Ran explains that this that the Baal Aveda is forbidden to give pleasure to the Machzer, in spite of that, he should be allowed to pay him. And the reason being is because, as we learned in the previous daf on daf Lamed Aleph and Aleph, for example, in the case when the Meicher, the seller, has a very difficult item to get rid of. It's a hard-to-sell item. The Gemara said that although obviously the purchaser, the consumer, is paying money, that's not considered giving hanoah. It's actually the other way around. Is that there's no hanoah for the lekiach, even though he's getting the item that he's purchasing. It's all of the hanoah of the Meicher. So we see that although you can have someone giving something to somebody that is forbidden to give hanoah to him, when there's, let's say, in the case of a neder, that's not considered giving hanoah. So although he's getting this item that he purchased and he's happy for that, but since it was such a hard item for the seller to sell, it's considered that all hanoah is going to the meicher. So therefore, the Ran explains, the Gemara's question is saying the same thing here also, that if it's a place where usually the machzer gets paid for returning the lost object because he's losing out his work, so although this Baal Aveda would be paying the machzer, that would not be considered that he's giving hanoah from the Baal Aveda to the machzer at all. And the reason being is because that payment was already his. Because this is my money that I would have been working, I would have gotten this money anyway. So if so, the Gemara's question is, why do you say Tibla no lehekdesh? The Baal Aveda should be allowed to give the money of compensation to the machzer, to the one who returned it. Because although he's giving him money, but that's not considered hanoah. Because that's something that I was coming to me, I would have gotten it anyway. Just like we find by the halacha of selling an item to a purchaser, to a consumer, where although he's getting that item, it's not considered him getting any hanoah. Because since it's a hard-to-sell item, we say it's all to the meicher. Although there's an actual item coming into his hand, here also he's saying, although he's getting paid, but that's not considered giving him hanoah. And if you say that it's even in the case of when the Baal Aveda made the neder on the machzer, in such a case, you shouldn't say tibla no lehekdesh, it should still go to the machzer. And that the Gemara answered, according to the Gears of the Ran, achod katani. What does that mean? It means to say that you're right. The Reisha that spoke about, there was two phases to this halacha of returning the lost object. There was a Reisha and a Sefer. First, in general, you could return the lost object. Then the Mishnah spoke about, what do you do if there's compensation normally in that place where people get compensated returning a lost object? And that the Mishnah said, Tibla no lehekdesh. So on that, the Gemara is answering that in the first halacha, when it said that he could return the lost object, yes. That applies whether if the Nechzi Machzer are Asrun on the Baal Aveda, or whether if the Nechasim Baal Aveda are Asrun on the Machzer. Either way, there's no problem of Anah, because Machzer could return to the Baal Aveda, because that's not giving an Anah, it's just returning his lost object. And the Baal Aveda could, it's not, when there's an Isra Anah to the Machzer, it's no problem for him to return it, because he's not concerned for Prudu Rabbi Yosef. But the Seifa, the Gemara is answering, what it's talking about when there is compensation, that it says Tibla no lehekdesh, it's only going on one of the two halachas of the Reisha. In other words, it's only talking about with the Nechzei Machzer, as through the Baal Aveda, that's when it's talking about, similar to like the other Mandama, that then we said, if the Machzer doesn't want to take pay, which he could, because it's only talking about that the Baal Aveda is forbidden to have enough from him, so then the Baal Aveda can't hold on to it, because that would be considered getting enough from the Machzer, so that's when we say, Tibla no lehekdesh, but you're right. It's not talking about the other case, which, although the Reish is talking about that, of when the Nechzei Baal Aveda are forbidden on the Machzer. So now Gemara continues and says that we just learned this machlokes between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi regarding this halacha of Machzer lo avedasai, if it's only when the Nechzei Machzer are forbidden on the Baal Aveda, or if it's even both ways, even when the Nechzei Baal Aveda are forbidden on the Machzer. Now the Gemara says, Ikad Masna Bahai Lishna, those who learned this machlokes in a flip way of this. In other words, the other way around, which is that, yes, there's going to be a mandama that would hold it, it's going to be either way, but then there's going to be a mandama that holds the opposite of the first version. The first version said that the halacha of a mishnah is going to be only when the Nechzei Baal Aveda, the Nechzei Machzer are forbidden on the Baal Aveda, but not the other way around. This version is going to have it that one of them is going to say it's actually only when the Nechzei Baal Aveda are forbidden on the Machzer and not when the Machzer is on the Baal Aveda. As the Gemara says, Plig by Rabbi Amir Rav Asi. There's a machlokes Rabbi Amir Rav Asi regarding the heter of returning a lost object when there's a neder. Chadama, one opinion says, Lo yishonu, we didn't learn that he's allowed to return his lost object. El b'shenichzi Baal Aveda asurin al machzer. Only when the one who lost the object had made a neder on the one who's coming to return the lost object to him. Which obviously the Ran explains that this is what's called its daden. In other words, that not all uniform the cases of our mission anymore. I mean, the halacha of when he could pay up his shekel and when he could pay up his debt, that's going from the madr to the mudr, meaning the one who made the neder, forbidding this other person from having enough from him. He could still, even though the person's forbidden to have enough from him, he could still pay up his machzah shekel and pay up his debts. But the next case of a machzah lo avidasai is actually talking about from mudr to madr, meaning that the one who's forbidden to have pleasure, we're saying he could still go ahead and return the lost object to the person who had made the neder on him. And yet in spite of that, the next Mishnah, which then says he could go ahead and take over his trumas, goes back to like the first two cases of our Mishnah of shekel and paying up his debts, is again from the madr to the mudr. Now, so the Ran says, although that this you have one case sticking out of here that's the other way around, the reason why the Tana says like this is because he wants to tell us all the things that are permitted from the madr to the mudr to accept a hana from him, which as we're going to see, that there is a hana, the one going to return it, who in this case, he's the mudr, not the madr, although it would seem like that there's some type of hana, obviously there's not, because or else all these cases would be forbidden, but it's like hana that we're trying to tell you it's not, that's why we say that the halachas of the Mishnah like this, as the Gemara explains, that umishum pruta d'Rav Yosef, now, whereas although we're saying that the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, so but the Machzer is getting some type of Ana, because it's what's called Pruta Rav Yosef, he doesn't have to give it tzedakah now when he's being Oisig B'mitzvah to return lost object. That's the Chiddush of a Mishnah, that Lo Shchiach, it's not common, and therefore that's not considered that the Balaveda is giving Ana to the Machzer. Again, that's the Chiddush that we wanted to say, that you could receive some type of Ana, it's not really Ana. Aval, however, this Mandama holds, if Nichzi Machzer Asur Balaveda, If it's actually the way which all the other cases of the Mishnah are, that the one who's returning it, seemingly he's doing the active action, that the machzer is forbidden on the balaveda to have anah from him, then actually lemahadalei, he wouldn't be allowed to return to him, which is an idea we didn't come across yet in the first version. And the reason is, mishum dekumahanilei. This version has that one mandama holds, that when the machzer is forbidden on the balaveda, he can't return it to him. Although we said in the previous version that well, he's not giving him anything, he's just returning him his lost object, this version holds that actually it's worse than paying up his debts. And the reason being is on two points. Because first of all, he's actually giving something to his hand, which you don't have by paying up a debt. Paying up a debt is an indirect thing. You're going to a creditor, you're going to Hekdesh, to the Gizbar, to give his Machzah Shekel. Here you're giving something to his hand. You're giving him a Hana. And moreover, because had he not returned his lost object, that might have been a pretty heavy loss. It might have been lost, it might have gotten damaged. So you're giving him a hana by giving him back his lost object. In contrast to a debt or the machzah shekel, nothing would have happened worse. He would have just had the debt he always had, but it wouldn't have incurred another loss. Here, by to return the lost object, you're really giving him a hana. And therefore, this version holds it's only permitted when the balaved is forbidden on the machzah. But if the machzah is forbidden on the balaved, he can't return it. Now, Bacharam, the other mandamar, again, it's between Rabbam and Rabasi, holds that no, it's not only when the Nichse Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, Afila Nichse Machzer Asurim Balaveda, even when the Machzer is forbidden to give Hana to the Balaveda, it's still going to be Mutter, again, because, first of all, there's no Chashash of Prudid Rav Yosef, so the fact that the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, that's not a problem. And moreover, there's no problem the fact that the Machzer is forbidden on the Balaveda, because when he's returning to him, the lost object, all he's returning to him is what his item is, and therefore that's not considered that the Balaveda is having a na from the Machzer. That's the Machlekes according to the second version. So on that, the Gemara asks, Tanan, again asking from our Mishnah, now it's asking on the first Mandama that we quoted, which said that it only works if the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, but not if the Machzer is forbidden on the Balaveda. On that, the Gemara asks from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Mokam Shenoitin Le'aschar. If it's a place where the one who returns the object usually gets compensated, so the Hano has to go to Hekdesh. So now the Gemara says, a bishlam el mandam, we understand according to the pin that says, that the halacha of our Mishnah that tells us that he can return the lost object is both ways, is not only when the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, but even when the Machzer is forbidden on the Balaveda, that's still Mahadah, that both cases are apropos for allowing him to return the lost object. So we could understand what then the Sefer the Mishnah talks about when it says this halach of makim, which is a reference to the last line, which is when it's a place that the machzir usually gets compensated, that then the hanor goes to hektish. And the reason being is because since we're talking about even in the case where the nichzi machzir are forbidden on the balaveda, so then whether if it's one big case or like the Ran had explained that there are two individual cases, so even if it's two individual cases, and let's say it's only that talking about in the case when the machzir is the one who made the neder on the balaveda, but however, as we explained already previously, in at least in the Ran's girsa. But the point is, and even if not like the Ran's girsa, if it'd be one long case, for sure it'd be difficult. But the point is that either it's talking about that, yes, so the balaveda is forbidden to the machzir, so he can't take money too. Or even if it's not, even if it's an individual case where it's only the machzir being usher on the balaveda. But as we explained before, let's say he doesn't want to take money. He's like, well, I'm gonna take money for doing a good deed. I'm not gonna take money. So, but it makes sense to say why it has to go to Hektish, because now the Balaveda can't hold on to it. Because it's talking about a case where the master is forbidden on the Balaveda. So the money he would have had to pay, and he's not, he can't hold on to it. That would be Hanof from the master. But El Manda Amma, but according to the other Manda Amma, meaning the first Manda Amma we quoted in the second version, that holds and that when the nechasim of the machzir are forbidden, and as some girsas actually have these words, ala balaveda, that when it's forbidden on the balaveda, and the girsa of the Ran takes out the vav over here, then loy mahadir, that then you're actually not allowed to return in the first place. So then, if so, that means our Mishnah is only talking about that when does the whole halacha of the seifa, which is based on the halacha of the resha, meaning that when could you return the lost object? And then you could get into discussion, okay, when he does, what happens if he gets compensated? He's only talking about when the Nechzei Balaveda are forbidden on the Machzer. That's the only case we're talking about according to this Mandama. Well, then Hechem Etaretz Makim. Then how do you resolve this word of Makim? In other words, that you can't explain Tipla Nola Hektish, because first of all, that even if, let's say, you said it was one long case, in other words, where the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzer, the Ran explained previously that it's not considered Hano. Because all he's doing is he's getting compensated for work that he would have had anyway. But moreover, is that the problem is also on the Balaveda. Why cannot the Balaveda himself hold on to the money? Because it's doubly difficult. First of all, he should be able to give the money to the machzir. And even if, let's say, he can't give the money to the machzir, but he should be able to hold on to it himself. Because you're telling me that the Mishnah doesn't discuss a case where the Nechzei Machzir are forbidden on Balaveda. Because if it was forbidden on Balaveda, he wouldn't be able to return in the first place. So if we're allowing him to return, now the only discussion is if he gets compensated, what do you do? What do you do? If he doesn't want to take the money or he can't take the money, so let the Balaveda hold on to it. He's not forbidden to have an awe from the Machzir. So therefore the Gemara says, Kasha, that's definitely a difficulty according to this Manda Amma that holds that Mishnah is only talking about. When the Nechzei Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzir, but the Machzir is not forbidden on the Balaveda, so then if the Machzir is not taking the money, so why wouldn't the Balaveda be able to hold on to it if he's not forbidden to have a Na from the Machzir? So now we continue on Talmud Beis. So the Gemara concluded that discussion of these two different versions of Rabbi Amir and Rabbi Asi arguing about what is the case conceptualization of the Halacha of a Mishnah of Machzir La'avik Dasai, which we had two different versions. In both versions, there was someone who held that both ways it would work, if either one's forbidden on the other one, and two different versions had that no, it's only when the Balaveda is forbidden on the Machzir, and the other one had it's only when the Machzir is forbidden on the Balaveda. So now the Gemara introduces the following Amarok Halacha, which will be relative to the discussion that we were having. Amar Rava says, Hayslafon of Kikar Shal Hafkif, someone had in front of him an ownerless loaf of bread, it was nobody's. The Amar Kikazu Hektish, and he said, this loaf should be Hektish. Then after he said that, not lala eichla, he took it to eat it. Didn't eat it, took it to eat it. Ma'al lafikula, he has committed mi'ila, which is a forbidden pleasure from that of hektish, in the whole entity, meaning in regards to the whole unit of the loaf, and he has to pay and whatever the obligations of mi'ila are on in the whole amount of that loaf of bread. Now the Ran explains, why did we speak about a loaf of hefker? Why didn't it just say simply, it's talking about the person's own loaf, which was in his courtyard, and he said, let this loaf be hektish, and then he took it to eat it, and that's a committing of me'ila. So that Duran says the reason why we have to speak about such a case is because if it was talking about his own loaf of bread that he was makdish, if he took it to eat it, then he hasn't yet committed me'ila. And the reason is because since before it was hektish, it was his, and after hektish, it's still in his domain. Essentially, he would be like the characteristic of what's called the gizbar of hektish, of the one who takes care of the finances of hektish. Where the Gemara tells us the end of the first parak of Masechtas Chagiga, that if the gizbar takes an item of hektish, he hasn't yet committed me'ila, because up until now it was always in his domain, because he anyways takes care of the items of hektish. And now that he's taken for himself, it's still also in his domain. And there's no me'ilah in hektish until you take something from the domain of hektish and you remove it into another domain. So here, who cares that if it's in his courtyard or it's in his hands? Either way, it hasn't yet removed him from his domain. So if it was the person's own loaf of bread, it would not have yet been a committing of me'ilah. That's why the Gemara speaks about specifically a case of a loaf of hefker, which it was within the person's dalat amis. Which the halacha is that a person's dalat amis acquires for him just by him being in those dalat amis. So therefore, when he says that this loaf should be hektish, it takes effect because he has rights in it, because it's in his dalat amis, so he could be makdish it. Now, however, when someone is makdish something, like in this case, when it was hefka and he goes straight away makdish, it never entered his domain in the first place. Because although the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Bava Metzi Daf Yud Amud Aleph that a person's dalat amis acquires for him even when he doesn't say I want to acquire, but here it's different because since here he said that this loaf of bread should be hektish, he obviously revealed his intention that he only wants it to be hektish and that he doesn't want to acquire it for himself. So such a revealing of his intentions, that works, as the Gemara there proves over there. For example, when if you pick up a lost object and you say you want it for your friend, so his friend acquires it and not him, even though obviously he would acquire it by being in his dalat amis. So you're also hektish is kainit, and he's not kainit. Now, therefore, the halacha that Rabbah says is that when he takes it to eat it, he has committed me'ila in the whole loaf of bread. And the reason being is because since he never merited, so he's not like a gizbar, as we explained before. So therefore, when he takes it already, he has removed it from the domain of hektish to his domain, because he's taking it for himself, and that's why he has committed me'ila just by taking it. Now, however, Rabbi continues and he says, "Lahirish labana." But if he took it not to eat it, but after that he said it's going to be hektish, he took it so he could bequeath it as an inheritance to his sons. So then, he has committed meila only within the thanks that he would get from his sons for going ahead and giving them the loaf of bread. And the reason being is because his whole intention with taking and picking it up was only to give it to his sons, not to acquire it. So that means right now it hasn't been taken out from the Rishus of Hektish to Chulin because he's not taking it for himself. However, there is Me'ilah according to the thanks that he would get from his sons, because now his children are gonna thank him for that. And that's obviously has monetary value to that. And the reason being is because since he's taking it to give it to them, and the Me'ilah is going to be when his sons use it, so he has committed somewhat of Me'ilah with that in regards to a Teves Hanoah, of how much appreciation the person gets, how much monetary value that has to the person. Now, the Ran just points out the reason why the Gemara is bringing in this halacha of Rav, which seemingly has no relation to the sugya that we were discussing, is because it's very similar to the next question the Gemara is going to ask from a Bchibar of Interava, that is, just like our case is discussing when someone was makdash a loaf of bread and they took it to eat it, the next question in the Gemara of Bchibar Oven is also where someone says to somebody, this loaf of bread is forbidden on you, and then he gives it to him. And that question, which the Gemara is going to quote right now, is obviously related to our sugya, which is talking about nidri hanah, about making hanah forbidden on someone. So that was Rabbah's halacha, that regarding if it's hefker, and then he takes it to eat it, that will be committing me'ilah. Now, b'yimin Rav Chiya bar Avi min Rabbah, he asked the following similar vein type of a question, but not relating to halachas of hekdesh, but rather relating to halachas of nadar. If someone tells another person, kikri olecha, my loaf of bread is forbidden on you, then the nosan lo b'matana, and after he said it's forbidden on him, he then gives him the loaf of bread as a gift. So ma, what's the halacha in such a case? As Rav Chiya bar Avi explains the question, kikri amar loy, he told him my loaf of bread is forbidden. Now what that means is ki ise b'rishusi hu da'aser. It sounds like he's telling him that when it's in my domain, then it's forbidden, because the word kikri, my loaf, sounds like that when it's his loaf. But after that, he gives it to him. Since it's not his anymore, because it's changed owners, so then it is permitted to him. Adilma alecha amalei, but there's two words that he said. He said kikri, but he says alecha, on you. What does that mean? Ilovei shavisei hektish, on you I have made a hektish. In other words, what he's telling him is, that, yes, this loaf that's mine now is forbidden on you forever because he was using alecha. So which is the primary word? On one hand, he says kikri, which sounds like my loaf, which is only when it's mine, but when it's not mine, when I give it to you, then it's permitted. Or do we say that no, because he told him alecha? Yes, meaning he's saying that it's my loaf now, but it's on you forbidden forever, even when he's going to give it to him. So is it permitted or is it asr? So Amalei, Rabbi said to him, Pshita, it's obvious. The Avagav, the Yavala b'matana, that even though he gifted it to him, asr is going to be forbidden. And the reason is because Elekikri alecha lafuke mai. When he says my loaf of bread is forbidden on you, what's he coming to exclude from? Lav lafuki di ganva mine migniv? Isn't it that what you're trying to say that he's coming to make it forbidden on him when he's going to steal it? In other words, as the Ran explains, it's definite that even when he gives it to him as a gift, he's intending to make his loaf of bread forbidden on him. And the reason being is because if not, then what is the application of that he's trying to make it forbidden on him? In other words, what does he gain by the nether he's making on that person? In other words, when the loaf of bread is still in that original owner's domain, so he doesn't have to make a neder forbidding it on that other person, because it's forbidden to him because of just monetary law, because it's not his, it's mine. And mine things you can't eat anyway, because it's my things. Now, you can say the reason why he was making a neder and then forbidding on him was because if you steal from me, so then it's going to be yours, it's not going to be mine anymore. And that is what I'm saying, that I'm making a neder that's going to be forbidden on you even then, because you can't entertain, people don't entertain things like that to make a neder in case a person steals from them. So rather, Rava said it's obvious, the reason why this person is making a neder on that other person is so that he shouldn't press him to say, give it to me, and that he's saying, you know what, forget it, stop bothering me, stop pestering me, I'm making a neder, you can never have enough from this loaf of bread. And if so, then obviously even when he gives it to him as a gift, it's going to be forbidden on him, because that person already made a neder making this loaf of bread forbidden on this person forever. So therefore, it's obvious that it is going to be forbidden. So that Amalei, so actually Rav Chiba Rabin said to Rav, like, there's no raya from your inference of what is the intention of the person making neder. It must be only in the case when he would give it to him as a gift. Because if he didn't give it to him, it's going to be forbidden anyway without a neder. And to think that he's going to make it us or the guy would steal from him, no one's saying that. Obviously, he's intending it even as a gift. And that is his loy, no. Lafuke, what the person is coming to exclude from is the i'azabani Allah. If he invites him as a guest. In other words, what he's telling him is to Rav is that really I would tell you that if he gives it to him as a gift, it would be permitted. Because then it's not, let's say, kikri anymore. And since it's not kikri, it would be permitted. Now, this that he's telling him alecha, so what's alecha for? That's only to exclude that if he invites him as a guest to say that alecha, it's going to be forbidden on you. And the reason being is because that doesn't contradict kikri. Because when he's a guest, it's still the loaf of the owner. And that is what he's saying, that kikri alecha, not when you're stealing, yes, no one's entertaining regarding theft. And if he's not inviting him, of course it's going to be also even without a neder, because it's mine. Of course you can't have enough of it. But it's not coming to say that it's going to be usr, so what's the point of the neder? Not to say even when I gift it to you, because when I do that, then actually that's not my intention. It would be permitted because it's not kikri anymore. Rather, it's coming to say, even if I would invite you as a guest, that it's still kikri, still, even though I'm allowing you to eat, it's still going to be alecha, it's still going to be forbidden on you. That is what the person's intention is, and therefore he tells Rava that there's no raya from your inference of what is the person's intention. It could be that actually nasan le matana actually would be permitted, and there's no proof either way. Now the Gemara continues. Now the Gemara continues with the following incident that incorporates the previous drasha. As the Gemara brings, Shochel le'achui l'Rabba. Rabba's brothers, that's Rabba Bar Nachmeni, who lived in Pumbedisa, in Bavel, so he had brothers that lived in Eretz Yisrael. And they sent him the following letter, trying to motivate him to come live with them in Eretz Yisrael. So they sent him the following letter, which was the drasha we just mentioned. Yideya haye Yaakov shetzadik gamar haye v'chulu. Yaakov knew he was a purely righteous person. And yet, as the drasha has been brought before, still he was afraid, and that's why he had them take him up to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, because he didn't know if he's going to merit to the mechilas, which are the tunnels, which are made underground so that he could come and have tcheis ha-meisim in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, although you might be a very righteous person, you want to come to Eretz Yisrael to live with us. Now, Ilfa meisiv badvarim. Ilfa added on that the brothers sent him, moreover, the following idea too. The brothers sent him, meisiv be'echad shayim mitzdar al isha achiz. There was an incident with a certain man who was in pain regarding a certain woman that he had seen her and he really desired her, but she lived in the chutz la'aretz out of Eretz Yisrael. Now, ubikish lared, he wanted to go down from Eretz Yisrael to chutz la'aretz to go and marry her, but kivin shashama kazais, once he heard this drasha about what it means to live in Eretz Yisrael, and if you leave that, you might not merit certain things, so gilgal ba'atzmai ad yoy maisei. So he rolled with himself. In other words, he maintained his strength and his stamina not to leave Eretz Yisrael until the day that he died, although he really desired this woman. And again, they use this as a story to again illustrate the great merit of Eretz Yisrael to motivate him to come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, moreover, they told him, even though you're a great and wise individual, it's still appropriate for you to come up to Eretz Yisrael to learn from a teacher. And the reason being is because you can't compare somebody that learns by himself to somebody that learns from a teacher. Now, and if you're going to say that, but there's no one as great enough over here in Eretz Yisrael to teach you, on that the brothers told him, yesh lecha rab, there is a teacher here waiting to teach you in Eretz Yisrael, umana Rabbi Yechanan, who is this? That's Rabbi Yechanan. Now, but then the brothers continued and said, v'im eina ta'ila, but if you're not going to come up to Eretz Yisrael, so, but he's zor b'shleish advarim. At least be careful in these following three areas. Al tarbe b'yeshiva, don't sit too much. She yeshiva kashal tachtoinis, because sitting too much is harmful for hemorrhoids. Val tarbe b'amida, don't stand too much. Shamida kashal leiv, standing too much is hard for the heart. And val tarbe b'alicha, don't walk too much. Shalicha kashal naim, because walking is harmful for the eyes. Ella, rather, shlish b'yeshiva, a third of your time should be sitting. So shlish b'amida, a third should be standing, and shlish b'hilich, and a third of it should be walking. Now, moreover, they told him, kol yeshiva she'ini masmicha, any sitting that doesn't have a support, amida noichem, and a standing is better than that. Which the Gemara asked, amida sakadaydich, would you entertain that really standing is better? But v'amar amida kashaleh, but you just said that standing is harsh for the heart. So Ella, rather, what they told him was that yeshiva, as we can tell on Tamid Beis, she'in basmicha, sitting that doesn't have a support, and that is there's two types of sitting. You have those that are supports, which is like these couches that they had, or these types of thrones, which there's a support, but then there are certain sittings which don't have like a bench or certain type of stools that they had. So they're saying that a sitting that doesn't have support, amida sheyesh basmicha noichem, and then a standing that has support is better than the sitting without supports. And v'chein amru, so too, they told them a different halacha. They told them that Yitzchak v'Shimon v'Oishia Amr Dover Echad, all those three said the same halacha, that is halacha k'Reb Yehuda b'Pradis. This is what the brothers of Rabbah sent him, that these three, Yitzchak, Shimon, and Oishia, say the halacha is like Reb Yehuda by mules. What's that halacha? The time like Luna Braisa. Reb Yehuda Omer, he says, Pradis shetva, if a mule, a female, is wants to have a cohabitation with a male animal. So ein marbin alehah, we're not allowed to cause the copulation from the male onto this female mule, loy sus b'loy chamar. You can't use on this mule neither a horse nor a donkey. And that is because a mule is made by both a horse and a donkey. Now, Rabbi Huda is in doubt if we consider the type that the father is. Do we have, is it only matrilineal or is it also based on the father? Now, therefore, if let's say this mule is the daughter of a female donkey, so we cannot even use a donkey now to mate with this female donkey, because maybe Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that we are chayshish, we're concerned for the, because we can't have climb, we can't mate two different types of animals. So maybe we go after the father too, and if the father's a horse, so you're going to be mating climb, because you're going to be having now a donkey and a horse. Now the Rabbana argue in Rabbi Yehuda, and they hold that we're not concerned for the zera of the av. And therefore, if let's say the mule, who's between from a horse and a donkey, but if her mother is a horse, so then you could have a horse then mate with this mule. And if let's say she's a daughter of a donkey, then you could have a male donkey mate with her. As the Gemara explains this, machlikis in Masechtas Chulin. So Rabbi Yehuda holds you cannot, because this mule is from the mother one type of animal, and from the father another type of animal. And each one is a problem, because you're going to mate her with either the horse or the donkey. It's only going to be one side of her parents. But the other side is going to create a problem of klayim. So Elamina, rather, Yehuda says that the only type of animal you could mate with the mule is that another mule that has the same father and mother. So if let's say this mule had a mother, a horse, and a father, a donkey, so the male that would mate with it would also have to be the same idea, that the father would be the donkey of that male and the mother would be a horse. So Amr of Nachma Yitzchak, he says that these three names that we said, who this is what the brothers of Rabbah are sending him, who they pass in Allah, like Yehuda. So Yitzchak is a reference to Zerub Yitzchak Nafcha, Shimon Zerub Shimon ben Pazi of Amrila, and some say it's actually Rish Lakish, because his name was Reb Shimon ben Lakish, so that's who Shimon is a reference to. And Aishia Zerub Aishia Beribi, this is the great Reb Aishia Beribi. So again, that was what Rabbah's brothers had sent him again, which we introduced into the Gemara, because they wanted to motivate him to come to live in Eretz Yisrael. And based on the previous drasha of even Yaakov wasn't so confident that he's going to be zechet to the Mechilas. So continuing on this theme about Tchias HaMeisim, the Gemara brings Amr Balaza, Ami HaRotzes Einan Chayim. Ignoramuses, those who haven't learned Torah, will not live in the world to come. They won't have Tchias HaMeisim. Shalom, like says the pasuk in Yeshaya. It says, Meisim Bal Yichu, they're dead and they will not live, the Goyim, etc., which it says, Refa'am Bal Yukumu, that they will not stand up. As the Gemara brings Tanam HaChesimla in the Braisa, Meisim Bal Yichu, it says in the pasuk, they're dead, they will not live. So Yechel HaKal, you would think that's a reference to everybody. Tamalama, that's a pasuk teaches, Refa'am Bal Yukumu, who's Refa'am? B'merapa Atzmei Medivri Teira Kasam Dabeth. It's the Reish Pei, the Shayrish, that those who, Rifnyun is a term of being negligent about being, it's like a soft grip, which you're not holding on to the words of Torah, those who are Amaratzim, they're not going to be Zeicha to Yukumu, they're not going to have Tchias HaMeisim. Now, Amalei B'Yechim, Yechim said to Rebelaza, Leinicha L'Marayu, their master is not pleased, meaning reference to Hashem, the Amar Luhachi, that you're saying this about many of his children, of the Bnei Yisroel, Amaratzim, that they're not going to have Tchias HaMeisim. Rather, Rabbi Yechanan told them, "Hahu b'merapa atzmei lavoitz kachav mudachsev." When it says refayim, from those that have a rifyan, a negligence, it means to those that have a rifyan in regards to idol worship. That's a really way off. Those are the people that won't have tchias HaMeisim, but amaratzim will. Now, amalei, but Rabbi Elazar responded back to Rabbi Yechanan and says, "But mikra achra nidarish." Actually, I'm expounding another pasuk, which will prove my drasha that amaratzim will not have tchias HaMeisim. Tachzir, like it says, a pasuk in Yeshaya. It says, "Ki tal oiris talecha." Because a dew of light is your dew, va'aretz, and to the land, refa'im topple, which means to say that the refa'im, whoever they are, will fall to the ground and they will not have this dew of light. So on that he expounds, he says, what does this mean? Kol ha'mishtamesh ba'or Torah, whoever utilizes the light of Torah, that's tal oiris, then or Torah mechayehu. That's going to be a dew that's going to bring up the revival of the dead. The light of Torah will make him alive. Whoever doesn't use the light of Torah, meaning he doesn't learn Torah, he's a Nama Aretz, so then ain't Torah Mechayehu, then the light of Torah will not bring him back alive. That's what, like the Pasuk says over there, that to the land, the Reform, those who have the Rifyon, will be laying down. But we see clearly from the context of the Pasuk of Kital Erz Talecha, it's a reference to the light of Torah. Now, but Kivin the Chazir to come and start, once Rabbi Elazar saw that Rabbi Yechanan was in pain, because he obviously had a good drasha proving that many of the Jewish people are not going to have Tchias HaMeisim because they're ignoramuses. So Amalei, but Rabbi Elazar said back to Rabbi Yechanan, he says, don't worry, Rabbi, my teacher, Matzasilen Takana Min HaTorah, I have found a way to rectify this from the Torah, which as the Gemara will explain, that if they benefit Talmudic scholars from their assets, from their monies, then they will merit to Tchias HaMeisim. Because the Pasuk in Devarim says as follows, it says, V'atim Hadveikim Hashem Lekechem, and you who attach yourself, you cleave to Hashem, your God, Chaim kol chamayim. The pasuk says, you will all have life today. You'll continuously have life. Now, problem is, v'chi evshel dvuki b'shchina, could one really attach themselves to the divine presence? But Bo'aksiv, there's a pasuk in the Devarim that says, ki Hashem leikecha esh oichla. To the contrary, Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. It's like fire, you can't get close to it. So rather, what the pasuk is referencing is, kalamesi biti l'tam ha'chacham. Whoever marries off his daughter to a Talmudic scholar, who obviously is supporting them. V'yisa perkmati l'tamid ha'chacham, and he does business dealings with Talmudic scholars, which specifically perkmati is that he takes the money of the Talmudic scholars, so that it's a partnership where he lets the Talmud Chacham invest with him. He does business with that money for investments, and the Talmudic scholar could just sit and learn all day, and he'll make profits from this person. And v'amahan the Talmudic Chacham and the Chassam is someone that gives benefit from his properties to Talmudic scholars. Ma'alav akasav kila medabek b'shchina. Such a person, the pasuk is considering as if he has attached himself to the divine presence. And what does the pasuk say? Chayim kulcham ayim. Through attaching yourself to Talmudic scholars, you'll merit to live. Similarly, you learn in the pasuk in Devarim, says la'avas Hashem lekech l'davka bo, that you should love Hashem your God and attach yourself to Him. Now, b'chiyav shalad medavik b'shchena, is it possible to attach oneself to the divine presence? And again, rather, what it means is kalamesi bitul tamachacham. He marries up his daughter to a Talmudic scholar. V'itzer perk matl tamachacham. He also takes the money and invests to tamachacham's money so that he can make money that way. And v'mahan tamidacham nechasev, and he gives benefit of his stuff for Talmudic scholars. Ma'alav akasav kila medavik b'shchina. That's what the pasuk is considering, such a person as if he has attached himself to the divine presence. And again, that's how meratzim can merit chesem esim by giving from their things to tamid racham. Now, Amram Chiyah bar Yosef, he says, asidin tzadikim shemevatzvitzin v'olim Yerushalayim. In the future, it will be that the righteous will sprout and come forth in Yerushalayim. So, like it says, the pasuk in Tehillim says, "Vayitzitu me'ir," and they will sprout from the city. Ke'esav aretz, like the grass of the land. Now, ve'ein ir el Yerushalayim. What does it mean from the city? City is a reference to Jerusalem. Shanam, like it says, the pasuk in Lachem Beis says, "Vaganoisi el ir azayis." I will protect this city, which is a reference to Yerushalayim. And therefore, we see that tchias amesim will be that the righteous will come out from under Yerushalayim, sprouting like the grass coming out of the ground. A related idea from the same Amora, v'amar b'chir bar Yosef, he says, Asidim tzadikim sheyamdu b'maboshem. It will be in the future that when the righteous have tchias amesim, they will stand up with their clothing on them. Kavochem mechita, because it's a kavochemer from a stalk of wheat. Because machita shenikvara ruma, just like wheat, you take the kernel, it's buried naked. I mean, there's nothing covering it. You just take the kernel itself. Yet yitzu b'kam labushim, when it comes out of the ground, it comes out with many different layers of coverings, which is how it isn't covered in the stalk. So tzadikim shenikvara b'levushen. So the righteous that are buried in clothing, alachas kama v'kama, all the more so for sure they're going to be covered and in their clothing when they stand up with tchias amesim. Another statement from the same Amor, Amar Chiyah bar Yosef, he says, I see there it's Israel, again regarding the future, that in the future the land of Israel, shetoytzi glus kois to klei milas. It's going to produce, just like we have fruits and grain, it's going to produce rolls and fine woolen clothing. Shem, like it says, about Tillim. It says, he pieces bar ba'aretz, which the little translation is that there's going to be a lot of grain in the land, but the word pieces bar is expounded upon in two ways. First of all, the word pisas is the word pisas which could be used for the palm. Pisas hayad means the palm of one's hand. Now, the palm of one's hand is pretty wide. A wheat kernel is not that wide. So if we're saying that grain is going to be coming as wide as one's hand, which is what bar means also grain, must be talking about a baked loaf of bread. That's what's going to be coming out of the ground. Now, moreover, where do we see a reference to woolen clothing? Is also expounding the word pisas. Now, bar could also mean pure, which is fine woolen clothing, because as we find the term that Yosef had, the concern is pasim, so you see that pas is a reference to a woolen garment. So we see in pisas bar a reference to both to this gluskayas, to these rolls coming out of the ground, and clay milas, fine woolen clothing. Now the Gemara brings another exposition from this pasuk. Tarabon within a brisa says he pisas bar ba'aretz, that there will be an abundance of grain in the land, but roish harm, the pasuk then continues, on the top of mountains. Now Amr, they said to expound this pasuk that a sida in the future will be the chita shetetamer kedekel, that a stalk of wheat will grow as tall as a palm tree. And va'oila b'reish harma, what the pasuk means to say that it's going to grow so high that it's going to reach the top of mountains. Now, v'shem etamim, maybe you're going to say, yesh tzar l'kaitza. Well, it's very painful to have to go ahead and climb to the top. to have to cut down the grain. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk there continues and says, Yirash kalavonon period, that its fruits will rustle like a cedar does in Lebanon, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu may be ruach mebeis ganazim. Hashem is going to bring a wind from his storehouse, umenash v'la, and it's going to blow on this stalk of wheat, which is as tall as a palm tree. Umashra es sultan, now the wind is going to blow on it, and it's going to make the fine flour of the wheat fall down. V'adam yitz l'sad, and the person is just going to go out into his field. Umevi maloi pisas yad, as we said in the pasuk of pisas, where it says that term pieces bar, he's going to go ahead and bring a fistful, a handful of this fine flour. From there, he'll have sustenance and a livelihood for himself and for his whole family. Continuing on these types of drashas, the Gemara brings a pasuk in Devarim. It says that im, and these are nevuahs regarding the future, im to, with, as chelev kilyos, as fat as kidneys, will be chita, will be the wheat. So Amr, they said in exposition of this pasuk, asid chita, in the future wheat will be, will be as big as two kidneys of a large ox. Now the Altitma, the Gemara says, actually don't wonder that such a phenomenon could happen in the future, because we find something even similar in today's times. Shari shual kinan belefis, you could have that a fox will take root in a turnip, meaning that it makes a hole in it until it uses it to bring up its young that it's giving birth to, and still what happened was is that b'shaklu, they took the rest of it, and the matzu b'shishim litrim b'litra shaltzipar, they found that it still had 60 litra of the tzipari litra, which is a huge amount. So you see, it's not so bizarre that you could have such large stalks of wheat as we find with there was such an incident regarding a turnip. Tanya learned in the b'raisa, Amar Rabbi, some have the gist of Rabbi Yisi, because if it's a b'raisa, it would be Rabbi Yisi. Ma'isa b'shichin, there was an incident in Shichin. His father left him over three stalks of mustard. And one of them branched out, meaning branching out from one of the stalks. And they found 9 kav of mustard, which is a huge amount. And just the wood of the stalk was enough to cover the roof of a potter's hut. Similarly, the Gemara continues, Omer B'Shimon ben Tachlifa says, Kalach shel kruv hanichlo na'aba, a stalk of cabbage our father left us over. We had to use a ladder to go up and down to gather the upper leaves of these cabbage. That's how tall it was. Now the Gemara continues from that pasuk that we brought just before. The Gemara continues with other ideas from that pasuk. It says in that pasuk regarding the future, that not just like imchelev kilius, but it says also v'dam enav tishta, that the blood of the grape you'll drink, chamer, as wine. What it sounds like from the pasuk is that from the grape itself you're going to drink as wine, and you're not going to have to press it, which normally is the whole process of fermentation, of making it to wine. You're going to be able to drink straight from the grape. So Amr, they said, that lo yikoyel mazeh oil mabah, this world is not like the world to come. Because oil mazeh, it's very challenging, it's very painful till you pluck all the grapes and then you press it and then it ferments. The world to come, maybe anova achas bekroin oy besvina. What a person is going to do, he's just going to get one grape and he's going to bring it on a wagon or on the ship. He's going to put it in the corner of his house. And he's going to just draw from it like a large keg, almost like he got a keg of wine. That's what it's going to be. You're just going to put in a faucet, and you're going to get wine straight out of the grape itself. And the eitzav, and the wood, let's say from the stem that's coming from the grape, mesik and tachas atavshah, is going to be enough to use for fuel as firewood underneath the dish that you're cooking. And moreover, v'ein l'chokol anava anava, you're not going to have any one of the grapes in the future, she'im b'shleishim garva yain, that won't have 30 sav wine in that grape. Shneim, like it says in the pasuk we just quoted before, v'dam ein of tishta chomer, that the blood of the grape, you'll drink wine. So the drush is, al tikri chomer, don't drink it as wine, el chomer. Chomer is a measurement, what's called a kor, which is 30 sah. So every grape is going to have, a kor is going to have 30 sah of wine inside of it. Kiyasa Rav Dimi, Amo, when Rav Dimi came, he said, similar type of a drush, Rav Maida said, what does it mean the pasuk in Bereishis? Which says, this is from the nevuah of Yaakov, regarding the Shvatim, this is all regarding the future. That he's going to tie his donkey to the grapevine. Now, but the donkey is spelled Eroi. So the drasha is from the word ir, as city. In lecha kol gefen vegefen sheber Eretz Yisrael, there's not going to be any one grapevine in Eretz Yisrael. She'ein tzarch ir achas livetzer, there's not going to require a whole city. It takes a city to pluck the grapes off of that vine. Now, moreover, it says over there in the pasuk, v'lasereka, and for the branch, b'ni asayin, you're going to need the son of the donkey, the foal. Now, that the drush is that ein lecha kol ilan srak sheber Eretz Yisrael. There's not even going to be even a tree that usually doesn't even produce fruit. It's not going to produce a load of two donkeys full of grapes, which the drasha is obviously from b'ni, which could be read b'nei, which would mean two donkeys full of a tree that usually doesn't produce fruit. You can have two donkeys full. Now, maybe b'shem ataima ein bo yain, maybe you're going to say, okay, it's going to produce that many fruits, but it's not going to have wine in it. In other words, it's not going to have the moisture of fruit that's necessary to produce wine. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk there continues and says, no, kibis b'yayin levushai. He's going to wash his clothing in wine. That's how much moisture, that's how much liquid they're going to have out of these grapes. Now, b'shem etemei no'odim, maybe you can say, okay, so it's going to be a lot of grapes and they're going to produce a lot of wine, but maybe it's not going to be red. And red wine is from the high quality. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk teaches, and the girsa is not those next four words, but rather uvedam anavim, in the blood of the grapes. So blood is obviously red, so we see that it's going to be red. Now, b'shem etemei no'odim, maybe you can say, okay, it's going to be red, there's going to be a lot of moisture, be a lot of grapes, but maybe it's not going to be intoxicating, so it's not going to be so enjoyable. Tamalema susai, as the pasuk teaches, susai is from the term of hasas, of enticement, because wine entices and seduces the shikr, the one who is inebriated, and we see that is going to have that element inside of it. Now, b'shem etemei no'odim, maybe you can say, but it doesn't have that much flavor. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk teaches in the next pasuk, chachlili einai miyain, that the eyes are going to be red from wine, which the drasha is, chachli, li is kolchayich shetoyimai, any palate that's going to taste it, oimer li li, that's chachli li. It's going to say me, because it has such a good flavor, everyone's going to want more of that wine. Now, b'shem etemei, maybe you're going to say lena'ar miyafo, l'zkenim eniyafo, maybe it's only good for the young ones. They're not so discerning like the elderly. For the elderly, they appreciate fine wine. Maybe for them, it's not going to be good. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk there teaches. Uleven shinayim mechalav. And white teeth from milk, which the Gemara says, Atuki leven shinayim, don't read it, that white teeth, el leven shonim, or rather for an elderly person, where that uleven shonim, that the wine's going to be so good for an elderly person, mechalav, better than what milk is for little babies. Now, so the Gemara says, okay, that's obviously drushes regarding what we're saying regarding the future, but Pashti the Krobim Aksiv, what is the simple translation of what the Pasuk is trying to refer to? So in that the Gemara says, Ki Asr Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came, he said as follows, Amr Kinesis Yisrael Afnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what the Jewish people say in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is what these Pesachim are alluding to, Ribayin Shel Olam, the Jewish people tell Hashem, Master of the World, Ramayz Be'enecha, hint to me with your eyes. In other words, they're interpreting that chachlili means, the word chach is from the word of machoich, of laughter. And chachli means laugh to me, meaning show me that twinkle in your eyes, the basim mechamer, which is better to me than wine, when you show me a smiling, happy face that you're happy with me. And va'achvi li shenayach, and moreover the Jewish people tell Hashem that show me your teeth, which is also a reference of laughter, because when someone laughs, his teeth show the basim mechaber, which is better to me than milk. That's what the pasuk is saying, that with referencing that it's good wine and good milk is really talking about, which is chachlili meyayin, that chachlili einai meyayin, that your eyes, that your eyes when they laugh to me is better to me than wine, and will eventually nai mechalav, when you have your white teeth, which is obviously metaphorically regarding Kadosh Baruch Hu, is better to me than milk. As the Gemara says, Masayel Rabbi Yechanan, this interpretation supports Rabbi Yechanan. Don't Rabbi Yechanan, like Rabbi Yechanan said, Ta'iv Hamal bin Shinaim l'chaveroi. It's better for someone who whitens his teeth for his friend, meaning that he smiles to him and shows him his white teeth, Yisim Mashkei Chalav, more than somebody that gives his friend milk to drink, which is also good for your teeth, but it's not as good as someone else giving you a smile. Like it says in the Pasuk, Leven Shinaim l'chaveroi, which we said, Al Tikri Leven Shinaim, don't read it as white teeth that you get from milk, el libun shinayin. Rather, the whitening of the teeth, when someone shows his white teeth to his friend, it's better than giving his friend milk. Now, continuing on this theme that we're speaking about the great blessing that is going to be in the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, La Asad Lavai. So the Gemara says, Rav Chiya Bar Ada, Makri Dardikid Rish Lakish Abba. He was the teacher of the young children of Rish Lakish. Ifkir Tlasa Yemiv Lasa. 3 days he missed from his Malama job, and he didn't come to teach. So Kiyasa, when he finally came, so Amalei, Rish Lakish said to him, Amai Ifkarta, why do you miss 3 days of teaching my kids? So Amalei, he said to him, look, Dalas Achas, there was one grapevine, one vineyard, that, and the reason why it's called Dalas is because it's from the word of Hamodal, which is hanging over, meaning there's poles, that's how the grapevines go, they hang them on these poles. So he says, there was one grapevine, there was one kerem, there's one vineyard, Hanich le'aba, that my father left over for me. Now, Ubitzarti mimenu yem rishon, on the first day I was able to pick Gimel Meis Eshkolis, 300 clusters of grapes, and Eshkol Agarv, and each cluster produced one saw of wine. Yem Sheni Ubitzarti Gimel Meis Eshkolis, on the second day again I picked 300 clusters of grapes, where Shnei Eshkolis Lagarv, it only produced two clusters to produce one saw of wine. On the third day, again, I plucked 300 clusters of grapes. And Sholosh Eshkol Lagarv, I took 3 clusters again to produce a saw. And there's so much that I was able to get. And half of it I had to give away, I had to declare ownless. That's how much grapes I had that I had to go pick from my father's vineyard that he left over for me. So Amalei Rish Lakish said to him, Ilav Difkart, had you not missed from your job of teaching my kids Torah, Hava Avditve, then it would have produced even more. In other words, because he was telling him, you see that every single day, the wine kept on diminishing from the clusters, because on the first day, it took only 1 cluster to produce a saw. Second day, it took 2 clusters. Third day, 3. So he says, that's the punishment for your bittul Torah that you made, because you didn't come to teach my kids Torah. Again, continuing about the blessing that there is in the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara brings the Rami by Yecheskel, Ikla B'nei Barak. He went to B'nei Barak. Chazinu lahanu izi de ka'achlin tusi te'eni. So obviously, B'nei Barak is a city in Eretz Yisrael, and he saw that there were these goats that were eating underneath a fig tree. Now, the kanotiv duvshe mita'eni, there was honey dripping from the luscious figs, v'chalva taif minayu, and there was milk that was dripping from the fatty goats. U'ma'arv b'hadei adadi, and on the ground they were mixing together. Amar, he said, wow, hainu zavas chalva d'vash, that's the land that flows milk and honey. Literally, the milk from the goat and the honey from the figs. Similarly, Amar B'Yakov ben Tistoy, he says, Milud lo'aynai, from these two places, is a distance of Shlesha Milan. Now, Pam'achas Kedamti Menesha, one time I got up very early, V'alachti at Karsula B'dvashaltein, and I was walking ankle deep in the honey of the figs. Amar Shlokesh, he says, L'didichaz li'chazabes chalav d'vashal tzipari, he says, I saw this land that flows milk and honey of Tzipari, which is in a place in Eretz Yisrael. I have a shitzen mil, not shitzen mil. It was a distance, and it was an area of 16 mil squared, which is approximately 10 miles. Similarly, Amar Rabbah Bachani says, L'didi chazli zavas chol dvash shel kol Eretz Yisrael. He says, I saw the whole of Eretz Yisrael, the area of how much has this blessing of flowing milk and honey. And as we continue on top of Kofi Yudbezim and Aleph, V'havi kimi bei michzi ad akra de tulvanki. And it says it was like the same, it was, if you had to put it condensed to one area, it would be like from Bay Michzi until the crossing of Tuvlanki. That's how much it would be if you put it into one area, which is Chav Beis Parsi Orcha, which is a length of 22 Parsi, Upusya Shita Parsi, and a width of 6 Parsi. That's how much, if you put in one area, that's how much blessing there was in the whole of Eretz Yisrael of flowing milk and honey.